three-ring circus this morning. And it did to you, too. We're coming today to the fifth of the Ten Commandments. The first one, you shall have no other gods before me. The second one, no idols. The third one, don't take on the name of the Lord in vain. The fourth, last week, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. What's this week? Exodus 20, if you need a little prompting. Honor your father and your mother. It's noted by Jesus this was the first one with a promise. Does it say love your father and mother? I'm sorry, I didn't get a response. It says honor. Why doesn't it say love your parents? Why does it say honor? There is a difference in those two words. This is a dangerous step to take, and I've debated whether or not to take it, but I think it might be helpful. Is there an exemption if your parents are not Christian? Does it say honor your father and mother if they're godly? Does it say honor your father and mother if they're good parents? Are there exceptions? Are there exemptions? No, no, and no. So one of the things I want to find is, if you've had parents who are good parents, this one is easy. If you've had parents who weren't, this one's a little more challenging. And I've gone back and forth with whether or not to do this. I'm sort of thinking now I won't. But just silently inside, were your parents good or not so good? There are fathers who are abusive, sometimes horribly so. There are mothers who are domineering, controlling, sometimes horribly so. If you had a parent like that, then there's parts of this lesson I hope you listen to. If your parents were good, pray a prayer of thanks every night, because not everybody was that fortunate. I read something in a novel within the last couple of months where a guy who was crippled looked at somebody who wasn't crippled and said, "If I looked like you, I'd be smiling all the time." Very interesting sentence. Very interesting sentence. So, let us begin. What does the word honor mean? If you go into the books that let you make connections between original Hebrew words as best we know what they were and modern English, it says to give weight to. Isn't that interesting? To give weight to. To recognize as heavy. And I don't think that means mass in this particular case. There's a phenomenon that we have when we do measurements of one kind or another. We sometimes have to take an average of some numbers. And sometimes we have to take what is called a weighted average. Now, without going into all the statistics of a weighted average, there are some values you give more significance to and some you give less significance to when you take a weighted average. Something of that thought is hiding in the original meaning of the term honor. Honor your father and mother. How long are you supposed to honor your father and mother? There is no time limit. If there were a limit, it would have said so. We've already said, are there exemptions for having bad parents? No. Is there a difference between children and adults? Yes. There is a big difference between children and adults. Children versus their parents, adults versus their parents. The Bible makes a distinction, and we need to hear that distinction. So let's begin there. Do you remember what it says in Genesis 2:24? Or can you take the context of what you're talking about and sort of imagine which verse back in Genesis I'm looking for? For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother. And I've always been bothered by that word, cleave. Cleave to his wife. Remember that?
Yes.
What's a cleaver? What's a cleaver? Something that chops things into two parts, right? What does the word cleave mean? Joins connected together. That, to me, makes English moronic. It just, that's not good. I can't imagine teaching English as a second language. I can't imagine people learning English when you have stuff like this going on. A cleaver chops stuff in half, and yet the word cleave means bring it together. Okay. Heard about a baker one time who was trying to speed up the process of slicing his bread. And one day he found a cleaver that was this long. He felt himself to be the luckiest guy around. He had found a four-loaf cleaver. Wait for it. Wait for it. You'll get it. He's lucky he found a four-loaf cleaver. If you are old enough to marry, you're old enough to be financially independent. You're old enough not to be any longer dependent on your parents. You're an adult. There are some people who are the age of adults who are still dependent on their parents. That is not a good situation. There is a assumption in the Bible that when people get that old, they separate from their parents. Some people separate a long way. Some people separate a short way, but they take responsibility for the life that they lead. That's what adults do. If they're not married, if they're not old enough to marry, if you're still dependent on parents, if they're still in those circumstances, then they are still under parents' authority. Now, whether you use the word children for that situation or not, I don't know. That becomes awkward for some cases. Now, what does the Bible say about children? Now, let me remind you of something that some of you may know and some of you may not have known. In the Old Testament, there's some books that are connected. The pastor this morning in his sermon, if you haven't been to the sermon, you'll see this, he talked briefly about a section out of 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles goes with 1 Chronicles. Very good. You see how easy this is going to be, right? 1 Samuel goes with 1 Kings goes with, right? In the New Testament, 1 Thessalonians goes with 1 Corinthians goes with. It is not obvious that Galatians goes with Romans in that same way. That is not obvious. A lot of people don't know that. Galatians is, and Romans are not related by being one and then another. The second one being an extension of and going further. Galatians and Romans lay on top of one another. Galatians was written first and quickly, we think. And Romans was written later, more thoughtfully, and it's longer. What's the order in which books appear in the New Testament? Paul's letters appear in order of size, biggest first, smallest last. So in the Bible, Galatians comes later, Romans comes earlier, when you really ought to read them in reverse. A second set of books that are like that is Colossians and Ephesians. Colossians, the smaller book, written first, specifically about a problem in one of the churches. Ephesians, written more generally, and was one of the circulating letters that, again, the pastor talked about this morning. So if you go into Colossians and Ephesians, you find almost the same verse, and that's not surprising. That all of that was for that point. You find almost the same verse in Colossians and Ephesians, and you shouldn't be surprised because the two were written by the same person about the same problem, but just one quickly and briefly, and the second a little bit more extensively and more thoughtfully. Colossians 3:20 is the first of these. This is the place where a few Baptists love to go and other Baptists cringe to go, because there's three groups, three pairs of people that are compared in this section. We're looking at the middle of those. Wives to husbands is the first one. Children to parents is the second one. Slaves to masters is the third one. We're looking at the middle of those. Colossians 3:20 essentially says, I think this is quoting from one translation, children, be obedient to your parents always. And then what does it say at the end of the verse? This will please the Lord. Parent, children, be obedient to your parents always, for this is what will please the Lord. Ephesians 6:11 is almost the same thought. The tag is slightly different. Can you find Ephesians chapter 6? You have to back up a couple of books to get there. Right? Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1. I think that's the right place. Is that the right place? Children, obey your parents. Children, be obedient to your parents. One translation says, in the Lord. You see that little phrase? We're going to do something about that one later. And then the tag is not, for this is what will please the Lord. The tag is, this is the right thing to do. Okay? So what's the message? Children, obey your parents and honor them. Adults, honor them, but obedience is something that's different now. You're not in that position of subject to their authority at that point. There is a time of moving away from that relationship into a different relationship. So, when you honor your parents, are you honoring those particular people? Well, sure, yeah, you are. But you're not so much honoring who they are as much as you're honoring what they are, the role that they play in your life. What was God's plan for raising children? That the children will be raised in the context of a family. Great debates are running about that in our country and across the world in these days. But God established an institution. Way back in Genesis, that's what that verse was talking about. This is why a man will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they will become one flesh. That he created an institution. And the institution that was central in the raising of children was not the church, it was the family. The church is to help the family, but hopefully not take the place of. So, let's go a little further. The purpose of the family was to be a place in which children were born and raised, the central place of acceptance, the place where we are to be cared for and nurtured, the place where we're supposed to learn right from wrong. Who are our teachers? Our parents. Who are our caregivers? Our parents. Who are our encouragers? Who are our guides supposed to be? And what's our response to our teacher, caregiver, encouraging, guide parents? Obedience. Obedient to their instructions and submitting to their authority. There's a section in 1 Corinthians 14. It runs from about verse 33 up to verse 40. And it's bookended with the same thought. It starts in verse 33, you see a thought, and I'm pulling that thought out of the larger context in which it sits. You see it prop up again in verse 40. And what it says is, God is not a God of chaos or disorder, but a God of peace and order. God's design is for parents to exercise authority over their children, and for children to be responsive to that authority, thereby honoring their parents. Now, here are some things I would like you to look up. Look up Psalm 127. Find Psalm 127. If this were being written in our day, it would have been gender inclusive in the later verses. But other than that, let's read Psalm 127. First verse, how does it start? Unless the Lord builds a house, those who build it build in vain. Now that's the first half of the first verse. If the Lord does not build a house, in vain do its builders toil. What's the second half? It's a repeat, but it goes bigger. If the Lord does not watch over, mine says guard a city. Keep going. What's the second half? The watchmen do their work. Mine says, in vain does its guard keep watch. And then it continues that thought. In vain you get up earlier. In vain you put off going to bed. In vain you sweat to make a living, since it is God who provides for his beloved as they sleep. The next verse is one that I think ought to be gender inclusive in our day. Sons and daughters are a birthright from the Lord. Children are a reward from him. I think when the word children comes in that second phrase, the writer is expanding that thought. Like arrows in a warrior's hands are the sons you father when you're young. How blessed is the man who has filled his quiver with them. I love metaphors and analogies, and I like that one. In dispute with his enemies at the city gate, he will not be worsted. Mine says worsted, which I thought was what you did to wool. So I think I'm interested in the word that yours uses in that last little phrase. He will not be put to shame. Do you remember Luke 2:51? Now take a guess. The Christmas story is over. It's giving you the little bit of information that you get about the time of Jesus' life after the Christmas story and before the time that he starts his ministry at roughly age 30. You get one more glimpse when he goes to the temple at age 12. What does it say about Jesus?
He grew
in stature and in favor with God and man. And there was one, that's Luke 2:52. Luke 2:51 is right before that. Some of you are looking it up. What does it say? Because this is the end of that picture of him going to the temple. And they said, where were you? We were 3 days on the journey and couldn't find you. Didn't you know where I was supposed to be? Very interesting. He says, I was in my father's house about my father's business. And he was talking about God's temple. But it then says something very interesting. What does it say? I think that's 2:52. Back up one verse. I did say one. I thought there was a verse just before, I think. One side or the other of that verse, it talks about him being subject to their authority. Do you find that? Okay. That's the verse I'm looking for. I think it's 51. I think verse 52 is the one everybody knows. I'm trying to get you to look at the verse right before that. It's 51, I think. Right? Yeah, yours says, what does yours say? Mine says, lived under their authority.
He went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them.
Okay, yours says obedient. Mine says, lived under their authority. What else?
Subject
to them, right? That's the role of children, and Jesus followed that as well with his earthly parents. Is there an exception for parents who are not Christian? Just checking to see if you've heard earlier. What if my parents are bad? Well, here is a rough truth, a harsh truth. Some parents are better than others. Sometimes in what the Coneheads on Saturday Night Live used to call parental units, one parental unit is better than another. Some parents are better than others. Some teachers are better than others. Some governors are better than others. Some presidents are better than others. Some coaches are better than others. And the list goes on and on. 1 Peter 2:18 is an interesting thing to look at. Right about here, we're in the middle of looking at the Ten Commandments. Right about here, I need to tell you something. I have been influenced in what I'm trying to share with you a lot by some people who've talked about this. David Jeremiah has done this. Erwin Lutzer has done this. Eddie Young out of Houston has done this. I've listened to those. The one who's influenced me the most is a guy named Lon Solomon out of McLean Bible Church up in Northern Virginia. And he has some things on his website where you can read. If you hear this, you'll hear a little bit more detail and some interesting slants on this. But he said something really interesting here. He took you to 1 Peter 2:18, and that is a strange place to go. Remember a little while ago when we were in Colossians, and I told you we're in the middle of three sets, husbands to wives, parents to children, masters to slaves. Who has the power in a master-slave relationship? Who has the power in a parent-child relationship? Therefore, in the Bible times in which the scriptures were written, who had the power in a husband-wife relationship? That's the way those things were written. 1 Peter 2:18 is picking up, 1 Peter, right? 1 Peter 2:18 is picking up the third of those pictures, slaves and masters. And Lon Solomon said, I think what he's saying here, because Colossians says here's these three parallel relationships that you can learn something from, he thinks he's saying something about parents as well. Are you ready? It doesn't stop with verse 18. It starts with verse 18. Slaves should obey your masters, mine says, respectfully. Don't go any further. Let's just go that far. What? That's an adverb, right? What does yours say? Submit yourselves. With all respect. Right? Okay? And then, what does it say? Because this is harsh. Not only to those who are, my translation says, kind and reasonable. What does yours put there? Don't, good and considerate. But also those who are harsh. Tough and cruel. Overbearing. Mine says difficult to please. Lon Solomon says, I think you need to see this as possibly applying to parent-child relationships. I picked up on difficult to please. You know why? Because I had a father. Interesting things. Eighth grade, I brought home a report card. I looked at it in my bank box about 3 weeks ago to make sure it still said what it said. And I found out something awful when I did. I thought I knew about that report card. I found out something I had not remembered. On that report card, I got the best grade report I had ever gotten in my life. Our school system used not A's and B's and C's. It used E's, which stood for?
Excellent.
Excellent. Some of you know this. S, which stood for satisfactory, and U, which stood for... I had nothing but E's and E pluses. A single E minus on physical fitness or physical education. P.E. Okay? The best I'd ever had. E pluses and E's. My father signed... You know how parents had to sign these things? My father signed it. Immediately above his name was a place for comments. And my father wrote, shows room for improvement. I had a conversation with one of you before Sunday school started. This person, a good man, came to me and said, I got a question. It's just really been haunting me. I think that's an accurate quote. It's really been haunting me. It wasn't exactly what he said, but it's what he was conveying. It says in the Bible God punishes children for the sins of their parents. That's not right. And I said, forgive me, I'm going to quote the whole conversation. I said, were you here 3 weeks ago? Because back up in commandment number 2, it says something very interesting. It says God is a jealous God, and he punishes the sins of people in their children, in their grandchildren, in their great-grandchildren. Three generations. And then the next phrase says, but he shows his faithful love to those who love him for thousands, and I'm told that that should be translated thousands of generations. And here was my question of him. Punishment means to you God is doing something that otherwise wouldn't have happened to cause harm to somebody who doesn't deserve it. I said, does sin have consequences? What would your answer have been if I had asked you that? Does sin have consequences? Does doing wrong things have consequences? Do the consequences only fall in the world you live in and the world I live in? Do the consequences only fall on the person who does the sin?
No.
Do the consequences fall on your family?
Yes.
Does it fall on your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren? You bet it does. If God allows that, you have been punished. I said, I don't know that that's right, but I said, that lines up right with me. But if you do good things, the ripples of that go thousands of generations out, not just two or three. It's a different way to look at it. But difficult to please. That's interesting. You know what I found as I was looking through my bank box? I found my mother had written that, and I didn't know she ever wrote anything like that. It was about 3 years before. I'd had a report almost that good, and my mother had written. Those of you who know advertisements from 40 years ago, how was Ivory soap advertised?
99, 99.
I took physical, this is for Deanna, I took physical chemistry from my father. On the second test of the first semester, I got my paper back, and on the front of the paper it said 99 and 44 one hundredths, and inside the paper there were no marks at all. I took that paper to my father. I said, "What's this?" And he said, "Just because I couldn't find anything wrong doesn't mean there wasn't something wrong." That's a true statement. Now, I am making a little bit of a joke about this. My father was a good guy. He thought this was helping me be spurred on to do better things. In a warped kind of way, it did. Yeah. There are parents for whom this has a whole different meaning and is way bigger, and I fully and quickly acknowledge that. My father was not a bad father. My father was a good father. My mom was an excellent mom. I could see a difference. I'm hoping I make some of that difference in my own functioning as a parent. Here's the thing. If you happen to have gotten one that wasn't so good, what now? What if you got one that wasn't good at all? What if you got one that was mean as a snake, as they said, where I grew up, and who was abusive in the worst sense of those words? What happens to all of this? Well, here's the first thing Lon Solomon pointed out. He said there's a verse in Acts. Again, it applies in a different context, but he said I think it applies here as well. It's Acts 5:29. Jesus' disciples are beginning to function after Jesus has been resurrected. And some of the things they're doing have brought them to the attention of the governing powers. And they've been called on the carpet. And they have been told to quit preaching in the name of Jesus. And they have an interesting answer. Acts 5. Whoops. 29. I said 9. 29. Verse 27 in Acts 5. When they had brought them in to face the Sanhedrin, the high priest demanded an explanation. "We gave you a strong warning," he said, "not to preach in this name. And what have you done? You have filled Jerusalem with your teaching, and you seem determined to fix the guilt for this man's death on us." In reply, Peter and the apostles said, what?
"We must obey God rather than men."
We ought to obey God rather than men. Let me read you my translation because I think it captures the heart of it. What are children supposed to give to their parents? Obedience. That's the way you honor your parent, right? But listen to this. Obedience to God comes before obedience to men. If there is a conflict and your parent tells you to do something you know is wrong, that's when you don't obey. Very interesting analogy, I think. Very interesting parallel, I think. If that conflict comes, and I will hope it hasn't for you, and I will hope it doesn't for people that you know, but if that conflict comes, obedience to God comes before obedience to men. Jackie, did I see a hand?
I was just trying to get that
passage. Acts 5:29. How long am I obligated to obey my parents? Until I am married or ready to be married or financially independent. I can remember very clearly when I got married. My wife had a year of college left to go. I went to my father-in-law to have a conversation. Some of you gentlemen know about that conversation. And he looked at me and he said, I am willing to fund her last year of college. I'm ready to pay for that. But if you get married, you're going to do that. And let me repeat it, you are going to do that. My daughter is going to graduate from college. She was first generation to go to college. Some of you in the room who know something about higher education, that's a pretty big deal. We counted the beans. We counted the little briquettes when we cooked our hot dogs because we couldn't afford hamburgers. We made it through that first year. But we were independent. He cut the cords. How long am I obligated? 18 used to be the point. Allison and I both know that that's changing and going away. Okay, so if we're not required to obey anymore because we're old enough and we're independent, what does honoring mean now? And remember, I still want to talk about honoring in the context of parents who are good or not good. What does it mean now? You reading my notes?
Oh, I had a good dad.
Yeah. You did have a good dad. I met him. It follows right along with that. A little bit more detail, but it follows right along. Treat them with ongoing esteem, reverence, and respect to the best of your ability. Take actions regularly to put those attitudes into practice. Stay in touch. Listen and consider seriously what they say. Value their wisdom. Share family time with them. And support them as you can when they need you to do so. Take the opportunity regularly to tell them how much you appreciate them, love them, and respect them. Again, to the extent that you can do that. Why should I do that? Why should you do that for your parents? I've got four reasons written down, and the first one is because in most cases they deserve it. You have life and you have health because of the care they gave you when you were too young to care for yourself. But just in case you've got a parent who doesn't measure up very high on the scale of good parents, here's three more. Number one, God commands it. That's what we read in the Ephesians. Number two, well, let me rephrase number one, because it's the right thing to do. That's what Ephesians put it. Colossians put it how? Honoring your father and mother pleases God. Right? And coming back to Exodus in a part we didn't read. Remember I said this was the first commandment with a promise? God has promised to honor you for doing so. In most cases, if we honor our parents in this way, their guidance will lead us into safe, productive, and satisfying lives. And I thought this was great from Lon Solomon. And this applies really, really heavily to my young friends on the left and the right. How a person treats his parents is a pretty good indicator on the sort of person that is. Young people contemplating marriage would do well to examine how their potential intended treats his or her parents. There's a signal there to you for how married life might be. Now there's other signals as well. How do his parents or her parents treat each other is another signal. Now, can I take the whole table and turn it over? How do we function as parents? Because we might want to think about that a little bit. Are we acting as parents in a way that invites, that makes it easy for our children to honor us? Now this is where Ephesians goes on, and we need to make sure we saw it. Ephesians 1 said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is the right thing to do. Colossians had a parallel, this is what pleases God. If you go back to Ephesians chapter 6 and look at verse 4, it keeps going. Because there's instructions to children, then there's instructions to parents. Any of you remember this instruction? And you probably aren't surprised to find that just a little bit after where we went in Colossians, there's an instruction to parents over there. Ephesians chapter chapter 6, verse 4. Have you found it? What does it say? Oh, that was good. I'm sorry, let's read yours.
Okay. Don't keep on scolding and nagging your children, making them angry and resentful. Rather bring them up with a loving discipline.
Thank you. Because that's a beautiful verse. It says what not to do, and then it says, here's what you should do instead. That was a great list. Can you read that just one more time?
Wow. All right.
Yeah, Janie needs to hear it. She's got 88-year-old ears. I'm sorry. I'm going to lose the class from up there.
Don't keep on scolding and nagging your children, making them angry and resentful. Rather, bring them up with the loving discipline the Lord Himself approves with suggestions and godly advice.
Nurture and admonition of the Lord, I think, is the way the King James gave that. Bring them up in the nurture. I like the word nurture. That's a good word to use. There's another translation that says, don't exasperate your children. That's a pretty good one. I see a head nod that you've got that one. There's another one that says, don't provoke your children to anger or wrath. Instead, bring them up with discipline, training, instruction, correction, advice. There's about five or six or seven different phrases that are used two at a time in each translation. And I like the translation that says not bring them up in the nurture of the Lord, bring them up in nurture inspired by the Lord. I think that was good. Louder.
Careful discipline.
Uh-huh. If you go to the parallel in Colossians, don't go there now, just write it down, but it's Colossians 3:21. What you hear over there is, don't irritate them or they will lose heart. And another translation puts that same phrase, not lose heart, but you will crush their spirits. You will crush their spirits. How do we do that? How do we accomplish becoming parents that can do this right? Well, let me give you a fairly long list, and because the time is short, I'm just going to walk through this very quickly. We get serious about living genuine, authentic Christian lives in our homes. We are biblically obedient, spiritually sensitive, and consistent in how we live out our faith. Children can spot a phony a mile away. And we don't live a mile away. I thought that was the greatest sentence that Solomon had in this whole section. Children can spot a phony a mile away, and we don't live a mile away. If we act abusively toward our family, if we gossip and backstab others when we're alone with our family, if we watch things on TV we ought not to watch, if we read magazines we have no business reading, if our actions and attitudes at church are at odds with our actions and attitudes at home, we will make it tough for our children to honor us. So, this is hard, and we're probably going to mess up. What do we do then? The answer is, fess up. Children don't expect perfection, but they do respond to honesty. If we honestly confront our own flaws and failings to our children, to our spouses, to our family members, ask them to pray for us, and try the best we can to make amends for what you've done wrong or for what I've failed to do. Then we've at least made a start. And don't forget, nobody can do this well without God's help. The Bible is very clear on this. If we try to become good parents in our own power, we're probably doomed to failure already. God alone can give us that power. So what's left to talk about? There is a big one left to talk about. What if we don't have any kids? What does all this say to us? You can still honor your parents in the life you lead, and you can help those who do have children. You can encourage parents with children to live their lives in the Lord. That's one of the pieces of what we're trying to do with young adults in our church. you can help them with the awesome task of raising children in the world we're in. And some of you have a history of doing this. I'm looking at one of my friends who's worked in the children's area for a long time, and others of you have done that. That is a good and honorable thing to do. It's not for everybody, but for those it's for, when you get in there and do that, that's a good thing to do. Galatians 6:2 and 6:5 talks about bearing your own burdens, but then it turns right around and says, bear each other's burdens. So children in your own family, children of friends in the church, children of your neighbors, children of your co-workers, doing what you can. There was a couple, I will name them because they were important to us, Nelson and Ethel Langan. He had been in charge of the Coca-Cola bottling plant here in Richmond until his retirement, and he lived next door to us for 20 years. He and his wife were grandparents to our children when their actual grandparents were either 400 miles away or 1,300 miles away. Nearly every day, they did something to affirm, connect to, and encourage our children. They were good, good people. Their children were gone. They came to see them every once in a while. They made up to it by taking the children of our neighborhood, especially mine, on. That's a good thing to do. There are times when Jesus said it would be better for this person if he had had a millstone put around his neck and thrown into the depths of the sea than to harm one of these little ones. Let me talk lastly about what do you do if you've got bad parents, really bad ones. How do I honor them then? You may have to create space, but you can still honor them by praying for them to hear God's call and to become the kind of people that respond to God's will. You can do that from a distance. Luke 15 talks about the prodigal son. What did the daddy do? He prayed, and he waited, and he watched. You can live a life that breaks the cycle. I think that may have been the second most important thing Juan Solomon did, said. If you have had abusive and hard parents, you can break the cycle. Statistics says you won't, but you can. By being a different kind of parent to your own kids or to the kids of other parents, you can break the cycle. That's all we have time for today, and we probably took some time we didn't have. This is a big one. And it's going to affect a long time. I think a lot of what we deal with is because parenting isn't being done very well on average. And because those of us who are parents, our view of our parenting is too limited.
If you have a chance to see the movie Courageous, all about parenting.
Courageous, the movie.
That's excellent.
Okay. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we pray that you would guide us into the week to come, that you would take these and all the other things we've thought about today and keep them on our heart, make a place for them in our lives so that we can begin to understand your call on us, the directions you have us to go, and the places that you want us to stand beside and work with our brothers and sisters in you. I pray all this in your Son's name. Amen.